Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Henry Will, and welcome to another pmlessonslearned.com PM Job Shop call. This is one of the three calls we host each month, and we have these open to the public. Anybody can join. But our group, of course, PM Lessons Learned, is mostly geared towards project managers and those studying for project management. We hope to welcome more and more people to our group, and for those of you that are involved, please invite others to be involved as well. Today is November the 13th, 2008, and this will be podcast number 51. I want to thank those on the line for joining us, and for those listening later on in the podcast, we're encouraging members of our group, which is now more than 1,000 people, to ask their friends to join our group and to participate in our group. We're all made up of volunteers helping each other out, so we're anxious to have more people join. Also, I'm sure that our host this evening will be talking to you about the Yahoo group that we have for the PM Job Shop group and explaining a little bit about what our group does and what the PM Job Shop group does, but The PM Lessons Learned group, which is the master group of the whole organization, is a group that we started more than 2 years ago. Like I said, we have more than 1,000 members now. We also have a group within our group that's on the LinkedIn.com. You can find us there, find information about that on our website and about our Yahoo groups and about our subgroups like PM Job Shop and the PMP exam study group and the PM best practices group that we have running right now. We sure would like to invite you to participate in them as you see fit. You could also look up on our archives page to see archives that you could read the notes of and look at our different PowerPoint presentations and download our podcasts and listen to them on your computer or on an MP3 player or even join our iTunes subscription if you would like. That all that information is there for you, along with FAQs about our group and whatnot. So I wanted to start out by introducing the two gentlemen that have taken over this group so skillfully. We have Mike Krepta and Scott Percival. Both of them have volunteered their time to work with this group to work towards networking project managers and those interested in project management together with each other. We have recruiters that get on the call and talk about jobs, we talk about career management and other types of networking things that we like to talk about. So all of these things combined together help project managers in their career, and that's what this PM Job Shop call is all about. So with that, I'm going to thank both of these gentlemen for the time that they've committed to making this a success, and I'm going to turn things over to Scott Percival. Thanks for being with us, Scott, and you too, Mike.
Thank you, Henry. Welcome, everybody. Like Henry said, we're all part of PM Lessons Learned, and it's about project managers helping project managers. I think it's important to point out here that there's actually three groups. When you join, you want to join pmlessonslearned.com. You get notices of all the upcoming events and special files, like Henry mentioned. We also have PM Job Shop, and PM Job Shop was created because we all receive job opportunities that may not be an exact fit, and we didn't know what to do with them. So we felt, you know, since, you know, we belong to this group, project managers helping project managers, why not create a subgroup called PM Job Shop where we can post these opportunities for others to share? So I would like to encourage you to join PM Job Shop as well. PM Job Shop is the group that Mike and myself moderate and facilitate on a monthly basis. And the group is basically about project managers and aspiring project managers. We have recruiters and some subject experts to help share their, you know, their experience in the job search. one of the things I'd like to also invite you all to do on PM Job Shop is we have recruiters there, and some of our members have chosen to post their resumes to the group. So if you send your resume to either Mike or myself or to PM Job Shop, we'll post it on the group, and you never know what opportunity may arise when one of the recruiters that belong to the group, you know, may look upon your resume and see a fit there. The last one that we have is on the third week, we have PM Best Practices, and it's just filled with all the, you know, the best things to do as project managers. So those are our three calls that we have every month. Henry touched base briefly on the podcast. He's a little modest. Yes, we do have podcasts. This is number 51. But those podcasts have been downloaded close to probably 50,000 times, or thereby, you know, pretty close to approaching that anyway. So that's pretty impressive, you know. So you can download that to your MP3, like Henry said, or you can subscribe to your iTunes. I guess the next thing I'd like to talk about is I'd like to encourage your participation in these calls. You know, we would like these calls to be as interactive as possible. Why? Well, we think that's going to make for a better call for everybody. But probably more important to that, I think coming off of a recent transition, I felt what really helped me is by participating in these groups, by marketing myself, becoming a leader in these groups. So by participating and asking intelligent questions, you're going to raise the elevation of your own brand to everybody else in the group, and they're going to get to know you. Everybody talks about networking. What they're starting to talk about is the warm network, okay? And that's what you really want to create. A network is not something like, hi, my name is Scott, can you help me? A network is something that's nurtured and created over a long period of time. And that's what's going to, you know, by doing this, by creating this, you're going to create your brand, you're going to become the expert, and hopefully you'll get be able to get some opportunities for that. One another way that you can create your brand is by becoming a speaker to our group. Now, what can you speak about? Mike and I would be happy to help you if you want to contact us. Henry's always looking for other people to help join the group, to help facilitate the group. The group is nothing but a bunch of volunteers, so there's lots of work that we can share. So I'd like to invite you to do that. This is November. Next month, we will not have a phone call. Kind of figured it's going to be too busy during the holiday season. So we've chosen not to have a phone call. But what I'd like to encourage you guys to do is do a little bit of self-analysis and think about, over the next month, what's really holding you back in the job search. Mike and I both attended a seminar last night. It went on for about 3 hours about the job search. There were six speakers. It was an excellent seminar. And it was funny. One of the guys kind of said something that struck home. And he talked about, you know what you're supposed to do, but then there's that always that subconscious thing, you know. And he would talk about, you know, oh, I'm going to go lose weight. And his subconscious would say, nah, you're going to go put it back on. Don't bother. Or, you know, why are you going to waste that money? And the part that I found humorous was he decided to create a name for him, and he called him Norm. So when Norm ever got on his case, you know, about, you know, I'm going to go do the job search, and, you know, Norm would say, ah, come on, go watch a football game on TV. He would say, well, Norm, you know, that's not the right thing to do. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So what I would like you to do is think about your subconscious. Okay, we all have it. And think of maybe a name for him. Maybe it's Norma. Maybe it's Norm. Maybe it's Fred or Ethel. Who knows? So I'd like to encourage you to do that. And then real quick, in January, we have Marty Zabertar speaking about LinkedIn. And then in February, we have Dr. Sally Wright, who's going to talk about the psychology of the job search. So we're doing some great planning, and I'm very excited. And with that, I think what I'd like to do is turn it over to Mike so he can introduce our guest speaker. And Mike, go for it.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Henry. Well, tonight we're very pleased to bring you Laura Baldwin from Diversa Partners. Laura has been with Diversa Partners for a while. Her office is based out of Stamford, Connecticut, but Diversa Partners also has offices in San Francisco and Austin, Texas. Laura has been a key contributor of Diversa's growth of sustaining partnerships with companies like GE, NBC, and Toys R Us, just to name a few. Laura has also developed significant partnerships with startup companies as well. On a personal note, Laura just got married a few weeks ago.
Good memory.
And this is sort of an apology because I was being a nudge, sending her emails and voicemails and wondering why she wasn't returning my call. So, so Laura, just on behalf of everybody, you know, I just want to wish you a lifetime of happiness.
Oh, thank you.
God's graces. And without further ado, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. You know, real pleasure to be on this call, and you know, I certainly take as much from it as hopefully you guys will. So, thank you for the very, very generous welcome. As Mike said, I am with Diversa Partners, and we are primarily an executive search firm. So we do a lot of work on the CIO, CEO, VP, and you know, any really C-level or senior director level position on a national basis. That's about what 80% of the firm does. I spend my time split a little bit, but about 60% of my time is really spent on the core technology position. So I head up a team that's based in Stanford. We really focus solely in the New York City metro area, although we have been expanding our reach a little bit further over the years. So, you know, as Mike said, I do work with a whole range of clients. I do work with your giant Fortune, you know, 100 blue chips, your GEs, Pepsis, UBSs of the world. I also do work with a lot of smaller emerging companies in New York City, as well as the Bay Area and Boston that are, you know, sometimes just, you know, five people in a startup that are venture-backed or, you know, perhaps 40 people and really in stealth growth mode. So really see the range of companies. With that respect, I do, in the core technology side, I'll do anything from a, you know, core developer to more functional project manager, strategy, so kind of spread both spectrums in that respect. So, what I would like to do is just really get an idea from all of you out there on as far as what I can, you know, what type of information we can really focus in on so that you guys get the most out of this session. Does anyone have anything, in, you know, that they'd like me to touch on in particular?
This is the interactive part. I'll ask a question. You know, what do you think is the biggest obstacle or what's holding people back in the job search? You know, some of the numbers that I've seen has been staggering. I know there was, 250,000 people let go in October, and I believe there's 500,000 people let go in the last 3 months. And the number I read was 1.2 million in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's still not, you know, I know there's the unemployment is very high, but I know also people are hiring. So what do you think would be, what's holding people back? Is it spending too much time on the internet or what?
Well, that's on a case-by-case basis. You know, I really, personally, I don't know. Like, it's hard to say from, you know, Mike to Scott what you guys are doing differently, why one person might see success and the other one wouldn't. But, you know, I think in general is that, you know, right now is, it's a hard time. It's a much harder time than, you know, for a lot of folks to find positions. The good thing is that there are still a lot of positions out there. So I tell all my candidates, the roles are out there. I will be calling you on jobs. But just remember when you go in for that interview that you need to be at the peak of your game. You need to make sure you prepare for it. And certainly your recruiter, whoever you're working with, should prep you before you go in, because there's that many more candidates that are now lining up and interviewing for those jobs. So the companies have the ability to be much, much pickier at this point in the game when you see the layoffs and just the hiring freezes with you know, the the larger organizations across the board. So I think that's it. And I think that, you know, as a result of that, each person really needs to make sure that they do their homework before they go in for an interview. You know, make sure your resume reads well. That's something that people sometimes don't think about as much. When you're applying to a position, you want to make sure that your resume is really targeted to that role. And, you know, by no means don't lie, don't stretch the truth at all there, but definitely pull out what you've done and what's significant, because it's not all the time that you have the hiring manager that's looking at all of the resumes coming in. Sometimes it's filtered through an HR person, especially if you're not going through a recruiter and you're just kind of submitting your resume into a system. People tend to look for keywords, and if they're not there, they'll throw the resume out. So I think that is really crucial to spend that time and to not just blindly submit your resume into databases without tailoring it. So I think that would increase people's chances. I think the other thing is, you know, do your research before you go in. Depending on what recruiter you're working for or working with, they should be able to sit down and they should be able to prep you very, very deeply before you go into each interview. So tell you about the company, what their growth is, if they're public, what's their stock price looking like, who specifically you're meeting with. The recruiter should generally have information on the personalities. I mean, I'm talking with the hiring managers and every which person involved in the process with the other companies, so I can generally give someone insight and say, hey, John's really tough. You're going to need to pull out A, B, and C with him. Well, you know, Mary's really friendly, and she's going to be looking for this. So when you go in there, just to make sure that you are, as I said before, really at the top of your game.
I have a question once you're through with your train of thought.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Okay, what I wanted to find out is I'm getting interviews. How do you get through coming in, let's say, second or not being offered the position? And it appears to me as if they're thinking that I can find another position, or I'm going to come in and that I'm not going to stay with the company based on my background, as if to say that I keep hearing that my background is excellent, they love this, they love me, but yet I'm not being made an offer.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on with that? What do you make of that?
Well, that just means that they found, I mean, in the abundance of terms, they found someone who they think is better.
Okay.
So it could be a specific skill.
Okay.
And again, each role is different. Sometimes you can have a project manager who, you know, maybe they want a project manager who interfaced a little bit more closely with finance. It does depend on the role per role. I think it's really important to know your story. So you hinted before that maybe they weren't happy with some of the moves that you made, or, you know, again, if you're someone who has a resume that says 1 year here, 2 years here, 1 year, 1 year, 1 year, you're going to have a really good story on why you left each company, because it scares people. It scares HR. If both candidates are equal and the only difference is that the one person stayed at the company for 5 years and the other one was a job hopper, they're going to go with the one that stayed for 5 years. So I think that's important too, is just to know your story. There's nothing wrong with moving. I'm not sure how many of you folks here are contract versus full-time. I only focus on full-time placements. But even on the contract and even on a couple, you know, one-year stints, just know your story. And go with it and, you know, have a positive outlook and reiterate to them that you're not looking to make this another one-year stint, that you're really looking to be with a company that you can grow with and that you can see yourself, excel at, or a role that you can see yourself excel at.
Okay.
Laura, could I interject here?
Yep.
Yep. I'm sorry, who am I speaking to?
This is Claire Pettion.
Hi, Claire.
Hi.
I think hiring managers they're everybody's risk adverse, you know, so you have to see what you can do so that you can become the best candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Because frankly, there's always going to be somebody that can beat you on the technical skills.
Okay.
Okay. So what you have to do is you have to be a good fit for them. And I've heard anywhere from, you know, your technical skills is probably 25% of the job search. That's what's got you the interview. But the rest of it is a fit, and that's 75 or maybe even 85%.
I've heard 10%, 90% is the breakdown.
See, there you go.
So I'm like, how do I work that other 90%? What else can I do?
Well, you know, one of the things is your interview should be a conversation.
Okay.
You know, if you're getting to the end of your interview and they said, you know, do you have any questions for me? And you say, nope, you know, I don't have any questions, or you're just starting to answer your first question or ask your first question, that's not right. They're looking, you know, they're looking to have a conversation. They're looking for you to be seen as a leader.
Okay.
You know, so that would be my suggestion. Would you agree, Laura?
I definitely agree. You want to make sure that you really want to have your interviews flow, and you want to have it as a conversation just like we're having right now. And prepare yourself before you go in. If you find that you stumble a little bit more on maybe the tough questions, write them down in a notebook. Remember, because you're probably going to be asked them on maybe perhaps on a next interview. There's not that many, you know, really, really hard questions out there, right? You know, tell me about a situation where you really excelled, or tell me about a situation where you, you know, had a tough situation where you had to, you know, work through it. Those are pretty standard questions that come up in a lot of interviews. So I think that, you know, if you feel like selling yourself, you're falling short in there, just rehearse it. As I said, write your story out. Practice it in front of the mirror. You have to say it with conviction. You have to be enthusiastic. Because I think that if you don't have the answers, especially being in a project manager position where you're required to work with others, that may make people a little bit more, you know, shy, or just say, hey, we're going to go with the other candidate and not really dig deeper to get to know you.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Laura?
Yep.
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike.
It's me again. You made a comment about, and Scott has mentioned this to me as well. He's looked at my resume, and I'm sure you have. And Scott has mentioned that it looks like I've been a job hopper for the past 5 years, whereas I've been in contracts, and these contracts lasted anywhere from 4 months to 8 months. And the only two full-time permanent jobs I've had, both companies went bankrupt.
Right.
Now, it looks like to someone that I am a job hopper, and there's that double-edged sword that I face that, you know, I'm looking for a full-time permanent opportunity.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know where I'm going with my question, but I'll start with this easiest one that I can think of now is how many and full-time permanent opportunities for project management are actually out there that you come across?
Well, like I said, I don't do any contract, so I really am not the person to talk to about, you know, what that side of the world looks like.
I'm trying to get out of the contract.
Right. But I'm saying on the full-time side, you know, now is actually, it's rather unfortunate. This is the first time this week, actually, that I don't have a project management position filled, or I don't have a project management position open. We had about a handful, and then filled one or two of them, and on the lower level, and then the company kind of put a hiring freeze there. So we always have project management positions open. You know, be it for a large or small company, I usually have about 4 to 5, maybe 10 open at a time that I'm doing a search for. But I think back to your question as far as, you know, with the jumping, you know, I've placed a lot of people who are contractors. who then went to full-time. I've placed people who are contracting their entire career. I don't know on your end. I'd have to take a look at your resume again, Mike, just to see if it makes sense for you. I had a few candidates who were in the contracting position and who are also full-time who had little notes besides their dates on the resume and maybe just put contract position. And on the full-time ones, I remember this person also had a similar situation where they were laid off a few times. Put the reason. So said, you know, GE, this date to this date, laid off, downsizing, or something like that. Just to kind of convey that you're not, you know, it wasn't pure job hopping that you left. But again, I just think it goes back to your story in there, and you know, you're a real energetic, outgoing guy. I would think that you wouldn't have any issues with conveying that at all.
Okay, but do you think project management as a profession is always going to, I tend to think it's always going to be contractual gigs as opposed to full-time positions. I mean, do you see it? You know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends, right? If you were, you know, when do people onboard on the full-time side, they onboard project managers at the beginning of a project, which is mostly when we get called in. For the full-time positions, and then, you know, some of those projects will last 3 years. You know, certainly if you're in a larger organization that's matrixed, you're going to always be pulled in different directions. And, you know, I place a lot of people on the very senior side. So the, you know, VP of PMO, VP of project management, you know, program management. So I do a lot of those positions as well, and those have all been full-time. So I think that it is, I think it's a great position for full-time in my, you know, and I don't think it's a, you know, necessarily just a contract position because, you know, I always have those roles open and I think that companies always have a need for full-time, really good project managers.
Okay. Thanks.
We have another question out there.
Well,
Laura, I'd like to piggyback on to part of what Mike was saying. I have two friends. They've been out almost 2 years right now, and they both have parental problems at home. They're taking care of elderly, sick parents. And they have, you know, how do you fill a resume gap of almost 2 years now? What would be your suggestion there?
Oh, that's tough because some employers don't respond as well as others. I think that for the person, you know, I think it's really important to try to stay as sharp as possible on your skills. And that might mean being involved in groups like this or taking some classes, trying to do something where you can say, hey, you know, I've been taking care of a sick parent, wasn't able to work, but here's what I've been doing. I think that might be the best scenario, but, you know, that's just on an employer-to-employer basis. I think that most people can, you know, maybe the smaller companies would be better. They might sympathize a little bit more. You might get done on a little bit more of a personal basis rather than being stuck in a larger organization. But that's a tough one. I think that's just going to take, you know, nose to the grindstone, lots and lots of interviews, and just wait for the right one, and just trying to keep yourself up to speed as best as possible.
Okay. I will share that with them. Thank you.
So just to get an idea, are most people on the call, are most of you currently looking for positions? Are you, how have you been finding the market?
Can you repeat the last part of that question again? Can you say that again?
Sure. How have all of you been finding the market in your experience and going through interviews?
I'm finding it very difficult at this point. I'm getting interviews, but I can't seem to close the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they're doing it to keep themselves busy. A lot of time I'm saying to myself, are they bringing me in with no positions, you know, in sight, but just to keep themselves busy? On the other hand, they're interviewing people. That's what I ask myself at times. Is that a possibility? Because
mm-hmm.
I don't understand what's going on. I've never had that problem in the past. Before, I know the job market is tough right now. But
yeah.
By the same token, I don't understand why bring a person in 2-3 times. You know, you interview for 2-3 hours and no offer. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm meeting with the highest levels. I'm meeting HR. I'm meeting with cross VPs. I don't understand what's going on. Is it the market that is that bad and there aren't really any jobs out there? Or is something else going on? That's what I would like to know.
Right. Well, the market, there are jobs out there, but you just have to realize that, like I said, in the past you might have had 50 people applying for a job. Now you probably have 5,000 people applying
wow.
for a job. It is just that inundated, and people who maybe this would be a step down for them a little bit, maybe compensation or leadership-wise, they're willing to take that step down to take a position. So I just think the competition is a little bit tougher. And I think it is, you know, there are positions, but like I said, it's going to take more interviews and probably a lot more legwork to land that position. And it is going to be really, really frustrating along the way. Personally, I don't think that companies will just go out and interview people for the sake of, you know, filling their day. I'm sure that they wouldn't want to, you know, waste their or your time doing that. But I think what I've also found is that with the few positions I've recently lost is the company wanted to hire the people, but there was a hiring freeze. And that's happened, you know, as I said, numerous times in the past few months on our end that we've seen companies just going into complete hiring freezes until next year. So that could also be a possible scenario of why those situations are popping up for you.
It would be best if they would just at least convey that message that there is a hiring freeze and
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the job is on hold, because it's like giving false hope. I don't understand it. To bring me in to meet with several VPs of the company and then we don't close the deal, I find that to be a little disheartening. Just a little.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't get that
yeah.
at all. You know, you have me in there with you, you're so impressed, you're so this, you're so that. You bring me back again, and then all of a sudden we can't close the deal. And
right.
A lot of
I'm assuming they probably had a couple other people on that. So you have to know that, you know, there's always, regardless if it's a CEO position or if it's a, you know, data entry position, there's always going to be a lot of people applying for the positions. So that might have, potentially they had a few other finalists and they narrowed it down.
Okay.
You know, I think what I would say is that it's definitely a buyer's market, you know, with you being the seller, so they can certainly be more selective. To Laura's point, there was recently an article about how, you know, there are so many people unemployment at this time that they're actually taking the holiday jobs that the college kids would take.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's becoming an issue for the college students also. The other thing I was going to say is that, you know, you have to remember, back to my earlier point, that, you know, there might be 5 candidates there. And Laura, tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, I imagine these candidates blur, you know, and they all seem to be the same. So, you know, what are you going to do to make yourself stand out? How are you going to market yourself better? How are you going to follow up with people? I mean, I felt, you know, I was out in transition for 18 months, and I felt I lost several opportunities because I didn't follow up with the right people. So you need to follow up with all the decision makers.
Okay.
You know, not just the recruiter, unless there's some, you know, there are hiring managers that say, hey, listen, just talk to the recruiter. you know, but you have to follow up with everybody. And then the last thing I would suggest to you is, you know, actually two things. You can actually say, hey, you know what, I'm sorry I didn't get, you know, make the cut. Congratulations on filling the, you know, the position. Should anything open up in the near future, you know, would you consider me? Would you mind if I follow up in a month or so? And then kind of keep at it.
And
last question you could ask is, you know, can I tell, you know, so I don't make the same mistakes or so I'm more successful next time, can you tell me what you thought one of my weaknesses was so I can improve on that?
I think that's exactly what I was just going to say.
That's a very good one.
That is great advice because I do it on a daily basis. When I'm out and I'm pitching deals, and if I don't win the deal, I will always go back to the investor and I'll say, what could I have done? Or tell me why I lost this deal. I really wanted it. And you'll be surprised. People will give you brutally honest feedback, and that's what you need. It'll help you going forward. And sir, I don't know if you're working through recruiters or if you're working directly with companies. It could be a split of both. But hopefully they'll give you that feedback either way. I know I always work really, really hard to get feedback, if it means, you know, nagging the client day and night, because I know how important it is to the folks that are out there, you know, kind of gearing up and going out and giving their all for those interviews. I think the other important thing just to everyone out there is, you know, times like these, it's tougher to find a job. There's no two ways about it. It's going to require for some people a little bit more flexibility, which I know it's something that it's tough for a lot of us to maybe adapt to. But, you know, if you're someone who said, I will not commute to New York City, I'm only going to look in Stanford and Westchester, well, this may be a time when you open up your search to New York City. Financially, I've seen people take huge cuts, which none of us want to take because it feels like a step back. But again, it's a matter of having a job over not having one in some instances. So I've seen, you know, I had one person who I just placed last week who was making 180 on a base. We placed her at, I think, 150 on a base, which is a huge cut for someone. But she, you know, saw the growth of the company and understood the tough economic times and made the sacrifice. So I think it's, you know, don't sell yourself short by any means, but I think that flexibility is a key component to finding a role, especially in, you know, these times.
Can I ask you another quick question? Is salary factor in determining who they hire?
Sometimes.
Okay. You know,
sometimes.
You have two great best candidates, and you know, you have two equally great person for the position.
Right. I mean, if you think, yeah, if you have, you know, if you're shopping around in Best Buy and you see two televisions and they look exactly the same and they feel exactly the same, except one's $5,000 and the other one's $2,000, you're probably going to buy the one that's $2,000. So I think,
going in, you don't really know how to position yourself with the salary, because that's always, you know, like one of the key questions, like what was your salary history? You know, that's always one of my fears. You put the right numbers down, it may work against you.
The important message to convey is flexibility. If you're telling me that you're making $85,000 and you would be okay with making $75,000, and we know that the top of this role might be at $80,000, well, I would tell you to, when they ask you about that compensation, to say, I'm making $85,000 on a base today, but to be honest, I am flexible for the right position. So that will let them know, hey, potentially, you know, you would look at the opportunity for a little bit less.
Okay. Thank you.
You have any more questions? Interactive phone call.
I'm like, it seems like this is my personal phone call. Like, where are they?
Laura, how do you feel about people trying to change careers at this point?
I don't have. You can do it, but I think it's gonna be tough. I don't know how drastic the change, you know, how drastic the change will be, but I think it, unless you wanted to go back to entry level, I think it probably would be fairly difficult to change a career. Unless, of course, you kind of got, you know, grandfathered into a role in a different company where they wanted you to stretch yourself.
Okay.
I think this market's all about, it's all about just selling yourself. And the best of the best are going to get the roles at this time. So you need to make sure that you are standing out like someone said earlier in the call, and that you're doing something to make them remember you. Following up after your interviews, that's crucial. I always tell my candidates to send an email to the people that they met with. I think that's, you know, really important. And then, like we touched on earlier, just trying to make it a conversation, trying to be personable in there and not just answering yes or no questions and seeing them, you know, seeing you come to life.
Gotcha.
I have a question. This is Demita Green. Not everybody is a PMP. Some are striving to be that. I'm curious as to how much of a weeding out factor is the PMP certification? How much of that are you seeing that's absolutely required versus maybe a little flexibility?
You know, I would say probably about 40% of roles that I see where they want someone with PMP. I don't see it a ton, to be honest with you. I see it as a plus. I've never seen an employer say we're not interested in it. But I don't see a ton of roles where it's absolutely required. But I think it's something that probably is, I have seen become required more and more through my years. So I think it's a great thing to get no matter what. It's a great, you know, tool to throw in your toolbox and to say, hey, I have this, and to utilize it. Again, it's just, that's just really on a role-by-role basis. And I tend to see it, because I do a lot of work with smaller companies, I don't see the PMP as much, but certainly with the larger companies, I think that's, you know, almost always there.
Okay, so we should not let that be a discouraging factor if we see that. You know, because some places I do see it say required, but we should not let that be a discouraging factor in terms of us applying for those that do not have that.
Yeah, go ahead and apply for it. You never know, right? So I don't think that you should ever sell yourself short in that aspect, but just know that if it's required, if I had a client and they said that it's absolutely required and I would, you know, and you did not have it, and I knew that there is absolutely no flexibility at all, then I would tell you, you know, you're not a fit for the position. But if you're, you know, throwing your resume into a database, you know, by all means, I don't think it'll hurt.
Do you see, Laura, PMP certification more an industry type standard? I see more PMPs for IT roles. My background is specifically in manufacturing, and I don't see PMP certification being required there.
I don't think I have data to answer that. I don't think I have the, I'm trying to think, going off of, I can't answer that for you, and the reason why is because I don't really focus in any one industry in particular. I'm kind of spread across, you know, be it manufacturing or tech, you know, pure tech companies. I see it a lot with companies I've seen PMP a little bit more. I think I've been more of your GEs, you know, and their groups. If I remember correctly, that's where I see the PMPs a little bit more.
Hey, hi, this is Ranjan. I just want to, this is for the first time I'm joining this conference. It's a great effort, everyone. Related to this question, I just want to add one experience I have recently. The recruiter said that, you know, if you have PMP, then you will be on the top of our selection list or clients list. So I think it's an added advantage. and you know, you can really put yourself on top of that shortlisting or shortlisted candidate.
Mm-hmm. I think it's always it's just a great thing to have on your resume too. If you think about, you know, no one's ever gonna slap you in the wrist for having an MBA or a master's on your resume either. I think that, you know, the more initiative you show always in getting, you know, further certification, I think that will never hurt you, and you'll, you know, it will, you know, prove to be, you know, fruitful to you at some point in your career, even if the role that you're applying for at that specific time doesn't require the PMP.
Maybe to add further, what I can say is during this downtime, I always suggested, you know, many of my folks, alumni, and, you know, my friends, contacts and all that, whenever time is down and, you know, we are searching jobs or waiting for something or getting some additional time for our career advancement, maybe the certifications are something which we can look for. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, because we don't get time when we are already on project and assignment deliveries and all that. If we are in between assignments, we can really concentrate on certifications, which can really add value. I mean, personally, when I was not PMP, my market value immediately doubled, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did that PMP in my profile. I got certified. So, yeah, it really adds value.
And I think that just reminded me on to add another point. It's not related to PMP, but just speaking of you know, maybe having a little bit more time, I think another crucial thing in helping people to find positions is to be very proactive if you're working with a recruiter in going out and meeting with that recruiter. We talk to so many people on a daily basis, and I even, you know, because I only do full-time, I actually speak to a lot less people than the contract recruiters do. So if you guys have an afternoon, go out and try to meet every single recruiter that you're working with, because it helps for them to know how you to be able to say to the client, hey, I met with John, he presents great, he's enthusiastic, love him, and they're going to remember you better, and they're going to push you more in their positions. I think that's just really key for any of you in getting in front of your recruiter and selling yourself in front of them as well.
Maybe the same kind of stuff which I'm doing in the background with Linda and Mike, right?
Yep.
Laura, how do you feel about job searching over the holidays?
Oh, I think it's tough. I think it's very tough. For us, we really, there's jobs out there. You're really going to see that flurry of positions open January 1, that next week. For us, it completely dries up. Like, I know from now, once December hits, really until the end of December, it's going to be very hard for me to get new positions compared to the ones I don't have. The reasons being is just budgets. We all know, we've all, you know, experienced them. They'll tend to open up a little bit more at the beginning of the year. And people are away. It's a choppy month to get people to interview. The process is a little bit prolonged. But, you know, definitely, I mean, put the effort in there. I wouldn't say, you know, don't go out looking. But just be understanding, try not to get too frustrated if recruiters aren't getting, you know, you're not hearing back from your recruiter right away because perhaps they're not hearing back from the companies and if things just drag out a little bit more.
So this is Demita again. Given that, what can one that's in a job search now, what would you suggest one use this downtime to do? How can they use this time more advantageous to them to be prepared for some contacts in January?
Excellent question.
Yeah, that is a great question, and I'm just going to kind of answer that by telling you guys what I'm doing. So this is a slower time for us as well, you know, like this November to January 1 time. It's always slower, and it's kind of a little bit of a double hit for us given the market. So what I'm doing is that I make it my purpose to go out and to meet with really great people that I probably wouldn't have the time to meet with, to make connections. So I would say on your end to do the same thing. Make this a time when you just go and you network the hell out of yourself. Go meet with as many people as you can. You know, if you have any contacts that you maybe have been a little bit, you know, lazy to kind of get out there and having a conversation with or meeting in person, I think that's really, really crucial. Just maybe trying to attend more, you know, if there's any networking events. I think, like I said, the most important thing is just get yourself out there at that time and then just spend your time honing your skills and, you know, knowing that story and you know, just looking through positions. There's a lot of positions as well. Sometimes you'll be surprised who you talk to. You go to meet with someone and they'll say, oh, this position hasn't come out yet. It's not officially on the boards, but, you know, let me send your resume over to the, you know, this person in HR. And you'll be surprised how many times that'll happen. I find that I'll sometimes blindly send over a candidate who I've met who I think is just tremendous. And I'll send their, you know, resume over to a few companies, and companies will get back to me and say, actually, we, you know, haven't officially listed this position, but we're thinking about opening it in the next week. We'd love to have them come out for an interview. So you never, you know, don't ever underestimate that, the, you know, what could happen when you just make yourself, you know, when you're really proactive and push yourself to meet with a lot of people.
Laura, can I add to that?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, you know, my name is Scott and I was out for 18 months, and I think there's really two types of networking. One is networking in groups like this. You know, there's several of them in the area. I don't know what, you know, part of the country you're from, but in New Jersey, there, you know, there's several of them that I find, you know, very, very enjoyable. I honestly believe that these groups make me a more savvy job seeker and help me really to be successful in my job search. That being said, most of those people are in transition, so it's kind of difficult to get somebody that's in transition to help you. They will, but they're not really employed. Someday they might. So it's good to meet these people. It's good to build that warm, trusted network with these people and stay in contact with people. The other type of networking would be in professional groups, people that are working. So, you know, I would suggest that maybe you visit a professional association, maybe attend some community events or cultural events. Maybe you're college alumni. You know, I'm sure if you found somebody on LinkedIn and say, hey, listen, you graduated from Rutgers University and so did I, you mind if I, you know, could I spend 15 minutes of your time? And, you know, you already have that common bond, you know, the fact that you both went to a school or something, you know. So I would suggest you do that. And then when you talk to people, you know, they say, well, you know, how you doing about the job search? And you say, I'm still looking. Not the right answer. The answer should be, yeah, I'm still looking. I'm looking in the retail industry. Do you know anybody? Or I'm looking in the financial sector. Do you know anybody at XYZ company? You know, then you're engaging in a conversation opposed to, you know, they did their cursory, how are you doing? I'm okay type conversation. So I think you should try to keep that in the back of your head too.
I think that's great advice, and you know what they teach us in our networking when you're learning, going out there. It's just who do you know, who do you know, who do you know, and I don't think that you can ask that question enough, especially when you find someone who you think is who you respect and admire, and you think would have some good contacts.
Mm-hmm. And back to my networking event last night, you know, there was somebody that came up to me and said, you know, they came up to me and this was the story they said, that they said, they just handed me a card. Hey, what's your mortgage rate? Well, I don't know you. You don't know me. Why, you know, I mean, I understand that you want to sell your mortgage, but I'm not interested in buying that right now. Maybe if we got to know each other, that'd be, you know, that'd be fine. But, you know, so you have to build that network. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can't be a, you know, just, you can't just, you have to be a giver, not just a taker.
Mm-hmm.
All good points. Thank you.
Okay. Another question? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, for all of you, please, you know, I don't know if Mike can shoot out my contact information to all of you, but feel free to reach out to me, and I can always try to, you know, link you up with some people as well.
I think, Laura, I'd like to, as you recall, this is being podcast, so your discussion will live in infamy. So my suggestion is that maybe you share it so that it's recorded for posterity, and you never know. Like I said, we've had almost 50,000 downloads of our podcast, and you never know who you might meet.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the time, guys. It was a great conversation, and hopefully I answered some of your questions.
Would you like to share your contact information for the call? Or?
Sure. It's Laura. I'll give you all my email.
Okay.
Laura, L-A-U-R-A, .Baldwin, @ DiversaPartners.com. That's spelled D like dog, A like apple, V like Victor, E-R, S like Sam, A, partners.com, and the partners is plural. So it's Laura.Baldwin @ DiversaPartners.com.
Great.
And your website is www.DiversaPartners.com.
DiversaPartners.com. I'm actually, we're launching a new site in a few weeks that's, you know, going to entirely cater to our technology group. The Diverse Partners website that we have caters a little bit more to our executive search site, so don't be thrown off by it. And that will be DiversaPartnersIT.com once it's launched in a few weeks.
And if you missed that information, you can either listen to the podcast, download it, and listen to it again, or all the information will be on PMLessonsLearned.com in probably about a week or so. Any last questions?
All right. Well, thanks so much, everyone, and I appreciate you inviting me.
Laura, it's been really great having you on this call, and thank you very, very much for spending, an hour of your evening talking to us.
My pleasure. Pleasure.
And we'll be reaching out to you. I'm sure people on this call will be reaching out to you on an individual basis.
Yep, please do. Feel free to reach out at any time.
Okay.
All right. Have a great night, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thanks,
everyone.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good
night.
Good night.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project Managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.